I think I'm having an art attack.
Welcome to another episode of Art Attack. I am here with your co-host, art historian extraordinaire, Lizzie Dastin, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. And of course, myself, me, and the only one, Bua, Justin Bua. So today we have a very special, very special guest, artist extraordinaire, Chris Dyer. And Chris Dyer is So Chris Dyer is all the way from Florida visiting me at my compound in Texas, Tejas. And we're actually releasing a DJ collaboration based upon my classic DJ painting. Sent it to Chris in Canada back in the days, and now he finished his part. He sent it back to me. I finished my part, and it was a beautiful one. See this in the background. It's pretty freaking amazing. And I'll send you a high res, Lizzie, so you can sink your teeth into it and teach it to your class. But Lizzie, isn't this amazing? Because usually we don't have guests. So welcoming one of our first guests in a very long time, Chris Dyer, to the studio where you can share a mic is amazing.
Yes. Welcome, Chris. Thank you, man. It's an honor to be here in your home, and it's an honor to be part of your show. I'm sure it'll be
fun. We're very great, super grateful to have you. And I love the work that you do, and I'm excited to learn more about it and share some of your ethos with our audience. I think it's just quite intricate and rich and layered with spirituality. And there's a lot of emotional texture to what you do. So really, really happy and grateful that we get to learn from you.
Thank you so much. Happy to share.
So Lizzie, ask away, because you know, Chris and I have been pontificating and dialoguing for the last couple of days, but you're really fresh to Chris's work. You've never seen it before. So I'm glad we're doing him, and it is fresh, because usually the subjects that you teach about, you've known for years, if not decades, or you grew up with them. So it's a different experience for you, right?
It is. It feels very expansive, and I'm excited to get into it. So please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that you identify as a visionary artist. And if that's true, I would love for you to describe a little bit more about what that is.
Yeah. I identify as an eternal soul of God in human form. And I do art that could appear in different platforms, including visionary art. That's the one where I'm more known. It's a smaller circle of artists. And I was there kind of like at the beginning of this branch of the tree. So, and now it's growing a little bit, but it's still a very small bubble that's not really recognized by the whole art world, because I don't know, maybe perhaps it has too much meaning for what they're looking for. But I'm also a street artist. I've been, you know, painting spray paint murals for, I'd say 15, 20 years, but I was also tagging as a kid in Peru when I was in a street gang. So I got those roots. And I'm also a skateboard artist. I've been skating since 86. And I used to do my own graphics, even in the 80s and the 90s. And then I started doing paintings and then started getting shows. That's where I first, when I got out of college, my first shows were all paintings on broken skateboards. With spiritual themes, looking for my voice and my style, which is a mix between a guy finding himself and psychedelia and tribalism, but not from one particular culture, but the root of all creation, which I believe is what all the tribes from around the world connect to, the center of all existence, and then bring it out and create a culture out of it. So I'm just trying to connect to the root of it without sticking to any particular culture. Even though I'm a mix of Peruvian, where I grew up, and Canadian, where I spent the last 25 years, and now I live in Florida. And I'm not that I'm trying to become American, but I'm like exploring the experience of being a, you know, in the country of America, which is very diverse, block by block, hard to describe. So yeah, I'm just trying to be me, and each painting I try to say hopefully something different and resonant with the experience I'm living in that particular time. My art's not like one thing, it's just like whatever's happening in the moment, and I try to switch up mediums and approaches and break out of my own boxes and comfort zones. And sometimes I fail, sometimes my paintings don't look amazing, but at least it's different, and different is good. And then sometimes it's good to bring your strong tricks and, you know, do a live performance and please the crowds or whatever.
So,
of course,
Chris, not identifying as a visionary artist, but a part of his identification, like, I would say the same thing for me, right? I mean, am I an urban artist? Sure, I do urban art, but there's a myriad of things. When I see Chris's work, I see, you know, I see a tattoo world. I see the skate culture come through, you know, which is hard, right? Because skate culture was, I used to do skating rapids for Andy Howe, and there's a lot of people who did that. So I see a melange of worlds colliding in when I see Chris's work. So I find that, and it's interesting, and Lizzie and I have talked about this. I think, Lizzie, who do we talk about? Was it Delacroix? Who, like, or was it, oh no, one of the impressionists, like Degas, he was in the impressionist movement, but he was not an impressionist, like,
you know, oh, Manet.
Manet as well. Yeah, so what's your take on that, Lizzie? It's so hard to put somebody in a box, and you can't put Dyer in a box, and you can't put me in a box, you can't put Manet in a box, but categorically history does that. Right? Is that?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting, because we have just in real time illustrated the differences in our schemas, because as artists, you need to feel the freedom to create and transmutate and change. And for me, as a historian, I categorize. And it's helpful to think, okay, well, Chris Dyer, he explores the theme of unity, and that might be his connective thread, but I would classify him in my courses as a visionary artist. And that, I think, as we've just outlined, is limiting, but I also think that it's realistic within certain academic spaces. It's hard for me, at least, to teach the artists who are more liminally described. I've never, for instance, taught Peter Paul Rubens, because I don't know where he'd go. And if you have a limited fixed amount of time, you teach movements, impressionism, and then Manet, maybe a proto-impressionist artist, and then that's how you get them in. So I think there's a lot of value in not subscribing to that kind of rigid identification. But I also see, from my perspective as an educator, why we still cling to that.
I would love, and just having you say that you would, you know, if you were to teach Chris Dyer, and I think that's so cool, the fact that Lizzie Daston could teach about Chris Dyer, could teach about, you know, Justin Bua, Mir Wan, Alex Gray, all of these people who are contemporary of yours. We're all contemporaries of yours. And, you know, you're not just teaching the usual players, the Jean-Michel Basquiat, the Keith Haring, the Jeff Koons, the Rauschenberg, de Kooning, Diebenkorn, but now kind of talking about people who are actually living, breathing, changing. Chris got to categorize him as a visionary. Okay, just for your course, cool. But then you can explain the nuances. Justin Bua, I could be an urban artist. Cool, that's fine. But then you can explain the nuances, because I think this is a bigger conversation, but it's people like you, Lizzie, that are so rare, who understand that the compartmentalization of categorization is valuable in teaching, but it's way more like fragmented and complicated than that. Most art historians don't do that. You do. That's very different.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I resist a category. For different reasons. Not that I'm against it. Like, I love street art, and I love visionary art, and I love skate art. So I'm like, yes, I'm that, but more. And also I want to be like a connector, a bridge between them, because say visionary art is the art of the mystic experience past the physical. So it's very ethereal and airy fairy, and maybe too utopic and hippie and dreamy, and not grounded enough on real life and the harshness. Meanwhile, you got street art, urban art, skate art, and it's all about like being in the streets and being tough enough to hang and falling off your board. And you know, there's pain and reality, but maybe too much. You put yourself in that world, and they're not dreaming enough of the spiritual side of things. So if I can bring a little bit of the visionary into the street and a little bit of the street into the visionary, we can find some kind of balance. So I want to be it all, but also I don't want to be like just one thing, because like, as I said, visionary art has not really made it into the museums too much, because they're like, well, that is too resonant with the movement of like, say, religious art.
Or fantasy.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
It's fantasy or like book cover.
Right. It just seems like, oh, that's drug art, that we don't respect that. Right now, this is the respected art, and that's not going to make it in. Or maybe if it makes it in 1 year or one decade, maybe the decade ends and it's like, oh, that's passé now, and nobody does it. And what does that mean? Do I also go in the rubbish can? Or if street art muralism becomes like a thing that's like not cool anymore, does that mean that my art is passé? So like, I don't mind playing with the platforms and reaching an audience, but that's not like what makes me or breaks me. I'm just expressing through different surfboards as I ride the wave.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And that's really smart the way you describe it. And also, you are so many different things and you have so many diverse sets of experiences. And so, of course, your art is going to reflect all of those multitudes. And you mentioned so many things that I'd really love to ask you about. Mm-hmm. And from an art historical perspective, I am really interested in your concept and the way that you utilize this concept of unity. And it reminds me of the Gestijl movement, this Netherlandish movement, and Mondrian is the most iconic artist among them. And they also were huge proponents of this concept of the universal. And I see that a lot in your art. And what's so different to me in looking at your aesthetic versus the aesthetic of a Mondrian is that his imagery was non-objective. There's no figuration. And yours, you seem to have this beautiful adherence to the figure. And so I'm just wondering if that's ever been a tension for you, creating something that expresses unity while also using figures. Just what's that dynamic like?
Yeah, I love your words, by the way. You paint with your mouth and the way you express yourself. Okay, so unity. What is unity? The oneness. How do you paint oneness? How do you paint something that is all in one? But at the same time, though I understand my oneness and that I come from the one consciousness that sprouted everything, I understand myself that I'm a fractal, that I'm a leaf on a branch on a big tree through time and space. And I can only be that leaf right now. I am an individual human. I look like what I look like. I came from where I came from. I speak how I speak. I like what I like, etc. So this is a filter of expression that the oneness can pass through me, and what comes out of me has the texture of this filter that I am, but hopefully what comes through me is from beyond. So might have a flavor that is tinted in Chris, still hopefully it holds the energy. Like what I hope that I'm doing is not even a painting. It's some kind of alchemical, shamanic wizardry where I'm injecting invisible energy and codes into an artifact, maybe a wall or a canvas, and the painting is just a bubble wrap around it. And that's what people see, like, oh, look at that cool bubble wrap, oh wow, it's pretty, but then they're interacting with the energy that I'm injecting behind it, and that will create some kind of like resonant feel that they're not even aware of, but they're feeling it, and they then inject their energy into the alchemy, the soup, the potion, and then they leave. And then, you know, in that way, more energy is accumulated for a painting throughout the years. I guess that's my intention. I don't know if it's happening, but that's what I imagine. And that's what I would like.
I like that. Now, with
My question would be, is that true for everybody, or is that your experience with your painting? Like, if a street artist does a painting on a wall, is it going to have the same DNA? Because I love what you're saying. It's like, that's just the facade.
Yeah.
But it's really the chemical reaction that somebody feels, right? We're getting perhaps esoteric, but if there is something true, like you're getting a reaction from it, whether it's good or bad or whatever. So is that just the artist thing, or is that something that you, Chris Dyer, brings to the wall with intention?
I think everybody does it in different degrees, but everybody also has different powers. Like, say, I don't want to say anybody's better than anybody else, but say, if Justin Bua already lived 200 lives before he came into this incarnation and is bringing the codes of all your ancestors, and, you know, you're coming in with fire and powers, like, I'm painting. And, like, you might not go out of painting being like, I'm going to create, like, some kind of magical portal, like I'm saying, but you're still doing it because you're throwing energy at your canvas, and you know you want to say, and then that canvas becomes a child, an entity, a consciousness of its own, and it's communicating to people way past your existence. Right now, you got many children in the world communicating with all these different humans who you might not even know. So you've created something past you, but it came through the filter energy of you. And I think we all do it, but we all got different powers. And I think if you do it consciously, and when you're actually doing it, like, say, if I'm painting a mural on the corner of a street, and that street has some negative history, for example, in my neighborhood, it used to be segregated. And I know that the street where I'm painting the mural used to be the border line between races. And I'm like, okay, so there's some dark energy lingering around in this street because it used to block some people. So I'm going to paint a mural, and I'm not going to even going to tell anybody. I'm just going to do it. And this mural becomes a prayer and some kind of vortex portal that can hopefully absorb the bad as a vacuum, energetical vacuum, and hopefully bring in a new energy from a dimension that's of higher frequential consciousness. I don't know if these words make sense, but that's what I'm hoping for.
No, it makes sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And just speaking of energy and the different contexts in which you work, do you feel like your outdoor murals, that there's a different energy to them than your work on canvas or your NFT, for instance?
The outdoor murals are fast and there's a lot of elements. So I have to kind of like concentrate and just go at it. They're really fun.
And physical. Chris was talking to me about how physical they are.
Yeah.
Which is tricky.
You got to be in good shape. You got to make sure that, you got to go up and down the lather. And
yeah, you use your whole body.
It's hot. You got a mask on. Sometimes you got gloves on. It's there's people talking to you. Sometimes things are kind of sketchy and you're kind of be afraid. And it's like, just keep on going. Everything will be fine. But it's fast. So in a day or two, it's done. And then I can be impermanent about it. It's like, oh, I let it be for that block. I don't have to see it ever again. When I'm working on a canvas in my studio, I really get in there and a lot of my energy gets locked in. So I don't do it with the intention of selling it. I like to keep them and I like to show them. I like to do shows and get people together and have people interact with it. But I don't necessarily like to sell it. And the ones that I've sold, the special ones, I'm trying to buy back and have my own collection so that then I could put them together in one place and people could dip into a building full of my paintings and have a experience with it. And then you're asking about NFTs. So NFTs, I did a collection called the Galactic Gang, and it was a collection of 5,555. So that's a lot. I don't think I've even seen all of the NFTs that came out of that collection. You guys, I've been going through it, and then you get tired after like 1,500 or something. But the way I did it is like I did the assets, the eyes, the noses, the mouths, the hair, the bodies, several of them. And then you give it up to an algorithm that shuffles up the deck, creating new creatures and color combinations I would have never anticipated or wanted. And it's like collaborating with chance, with randomness, with perhaps a consciousness that is in randomness and chance, because everything is synchronistic, and thus come in all these NFT creatures, and then people buy them and they fall in love with it, and they give it names and they invent a story. So they kind of like assign what that means to them. So it does have energy and power, even though it's made out of JPEGs or digital light, which is also minerals in a computer. I think everything has consciousness, from a computer to a table to a human. It's just different levels.
I love that. Yeah, it seems like another running theme in your work is that you are open to various portals and what they could unlock in you and your creativity. And so for NFTs, this algorithm is just a tool. It's a portal that unlocked a creativity in your work that you might not have consciously been aware of. And speaking of another one of these portals, I know that you have embarked on maybe over 45 ayahuasca spiritual journeys. And I'm just wondering how ayahuasca specifically, but how psychedelics allow you to access maybe what can't be accessed otherwise.
Yeah, ayahuasca for me is a powerful medicine and antivirus tool. You know, in the same way we're talking about computers, ayahuasca comes in, checks out your systems, finds the viruses, collects them, and helps you dispose of them through vomiting or movement or sometimes through lower regions. It's not that fun. You got to psych yourself up to do it. But once you've cleansed enough, like cleaning the windshields of your car, you're allowed to see what's beyond your human reality and the human world and the physical plane. And you can experience what it is to be yourself outside of time and space and closer to the consciousness of what we would imagine is God, or at least some unified net of consciousnesses that live in unison in a less physical dimension that is even hard to grasp. Like, you have to kind of like experience it to kind of like try to get it. And then you go back to your human body and you're like, whoa, what was that? That's so crazy. Like, I wasn't just me. I was a lot of people. And the me is not even the Chris human identity. It's like this energy of love that is also a fraction of God. And it's just so big, but it's beautiful. And it helps you live the physical life from a nicer perspective, because you're like, okay, I'm eternal, just playing a, you know, a live action virtual reality video game where the objective is to love everything you can. Love yourself, love everybody. And if I can achieve that, I won the video game.
Lizzie, is this something that you're going to do soon in order to open up?
There was a time in my life when I considered, but actually I wanted to ask you, Bua, too, have psychedelics unlocked, not necessarily ayahuasca specifically, but have psychedelics unlocked any kind of visual imagery in you that your conscious mind maybe wasn't introducing in your work?
You know, I'm not really a psychonaut. Like, my psychonaut experiences with mescaline and mushrooms was much more me being a nutty teenage kid and less like what Chris does it, which is really seems really medicinal and really about growing and growing with intention. Mine early on, because I did a lot of stuff when I was young, and you know, it was really like about fucking having fun and getting crazy and being wild. So, you know, I'm an avid marijuana user, and I would say that oftentimes the spirit of weed makes you look in the mirror. And I know a lot of people don't like that. Like, I have a lot of friends like, I don't smoke weed. It makes me paranoid, stressed out. But a lot of that is just because it's right here, and you just have to kind of look at yourself like, God, dude, you just need to be, you have to stop eating sugar. You have to go on a water fast. You have to start working harder. You need to do 10, 20 push-up. You know what I mean? Just, you got to do some shit. And marijuana will just talk to you like that. And it'll also talk to you in another way, which is like, yeah, you can have that ice cream when you're hungry. Just have some ice cream. You know, and you're like, so it, I think I see both sides of the coin. So I would say that my, I would like to experience more of what Chris has experienced. Yeah, and I think that it would definitely affect me and my art and me as a person for sure. I'm open to that. But you know, it's like you said, Lizzie, I mean, we have children and it is hard to just take a couple of hours off, you know, without one of my kids like, hey, I need you to do this and that. And you're like, fuck, you know. Certainly I wasn't like my mom who was tripping balls on LSD when I was 2 years old and then 3 years old. And then I finally started peeing in the closet and I went out in the middle of my mom peeking on however many tabs of LSD. And I said, mom, we need to go to grandma's. You can't take care of me. I was 4 years old. I said, you can't take care of me. We have to go.
Wow.
And she was like, okay. And she sobered up. It's interesting how she sobered up pretty much right away to go like, okay, got on the train, went to my grandma's and so. You know, so
yeah, you hear your child say that to you.
You got to be in the right consciousness. And I think that's kind of what makes artists like Chris, and not a lot of them who are, you know, open to allowing themselves grow. And invariably, that's going to change your work. That's going to influence your work. That's going to enlighten you.
Of course. No, I think it's really an act of courage to confront yourself again and again, and maybe a darker, shadowy side of yourself through these spiritual journeys. And I think the way that you have leveraged those experiences in such a vulnerable way in your art is just wonderful. And I'm sure as a visual thinker, when you're on these journeys, you see things that maybe you haven't seen before, and maybe that's part of some collective consciousness, but you weren't aware of it. And then now you get to paint it and share it with the world.
Mm-hmm. I would say that the medicine flows through all of reality. You don't have to take ayahuasca or any psychedelic in order to have a life that is full of the lessons that she wants to give you. It's just with Aya, it's condensed in like 3 to 5 hours of like, okay, this is like a intense workshop. Let's go. This is who you are. This is what you are doing. This is your relationship with this person. This is the demon you're carrying. Can you deal with it? Can you cut it out? Can you recognize it in your normal life whenever you're having self-defeating thoughts? Can you see that's not you? That's like some kind of twig inside your brain that you got to pull out. You got to be aware of it. And it's like over and over and over. So it's like a really way of like putting the spotlight on a bunch of things from a really high quality interdimensional psychologist, just like really helping you realize. At the same time, you can see the aliens operating on your body and removing things like, this shouldn't be here. Let's help out this stupid human not carry this trauma from when he was 5 years old. And so it's like you're taking your car to the mechanic. So sure, it's disconcerting, it's uncomfortable, it's nauseating, it's not fun, but the rewards is just like a lighter life. So that's what I will do for myself, because like, why should I live a life with suffering and carrying all this density if I can just have some energetical showers? Others might be braver and take a longer path towards it through living life, through painting, through the struggles. But that doesn't mean they're not gonna realize like, oh shit, I should do more push-ups. I should meditate more. Like, I know this. I don't need to take a psychedelic to know this, because life has been telling me in different synchronistic ways. And you know what? Today I'm actually gonna start doing it. And that always comes from you. You can go and do ayahuasca so your face is green and come out and still act the same as always. It's the real sober life where the work is done. And it's the awareness that she gives you, and hopefully the motivation that makes you go out there and drop the BS and be a better version of yourself. And yes, that reflects in art. And yes, sometimes you do have visions. Not always. Sometimes it's just psychological inside mental work. But sometimes she takes you to other dimensions that are impossible to paint because they're so very detailed, 3D vision. Like, how do you do a painting where you're seeing from free, like up, down, back, like you see, and you are it at the same time. So there's not a thing you're looking at. You're just the energy. You can bring little breadcrumbs. And I feel sometimes I do like cartoons that echo that, but it's not quite it. It's a little bit of like I feel like my art's like a joke compared to what I see in there, but it doesn't really matter. I'm not trying to prove anything. And when I'm in that space, I'm not even thinking like, hey, remember this thing, because it'll make it be a great painting. I'm just like, detach from all these things that you're trying to chase, this whole thing of like being a great artist and impressing everybody with your career and yourself. Just love yourself no matter what. And sure, we will help you do the paintings that you need to do, but it's always good. And you're always the best you, as long as you're trying your best. So that's the attitude I try to have. And, you know, that's why, as I was saying to you before, I'm not trying to compete with anyone. I'm just trying to like shine my light to the best of my abilities and help as I can. And I wouldn't never want my art to like beat or hurt or one up anybody else. I feel we can just all bring different Lego blocks and create, you know, if each one of our art is a Lego block, you know, all of Bua's collection is one Lego block and all of Chris's art is a Lego block. And today we just build a castle of a new reality made out of soul, heart expressions. I think that's a better world.
Well, I agree. And actually that really segues into something that I've been thinking about in digesting your work that I haven't really articulated to myself, but this lack of competition that you seem to use as a governing force in your life, I think is so exceptional. And I read that you went to an all-boys school in Peru and discussed that society and that environment as hyper-masculine. And I also think, and this is, I know, really reductive, but the need for competition as aligning with that hyper-masculinity. And so I'm just wondering, what is your sense of what it means to be a masculine spirit? And does that relate to your art?
Yeah. Just because I have the intention of being not competitive doesn't mean I'm like perfectly not competitive. I will be on Instagram on every day and be somebody doing something really good artistically or achieving an artistic merit or achievement that I wish I did. And then I see a negative feeling showing up in my chest. And before I react and scroll by, it's like, whoa, look at that feeling. Why are you feeling that way? Why is his success or her achievement make you feel bad? Where are you not feeling good about where you're at, where you have to feel bad in comparison to what that person's achieving? And then I'm like, yeah, that's right. I should just be happy for them because they're shining to the best of their capacities. And I don't want anybody to feel shitty about me. Like, I know some people hate me because I'm just this happy artist that goes there and be like, yay, let's be positive, everybody. Let's make some art and live in utopia. I know some people hate that, but I can't control their reaction. I can only control mine. So I got to keep myself in check and try my best to like drop the bullshit and be like, yo, don't care, you know, give them their like, go and give them their double tap on their things. Like, congrats, you achieved it. Hopefully I can achieve it too. If I earned it, whatever, it doesn't really matter. Cause I'm already so blessed. Why should I feel like you can never get it all? You can never be like 100, 1,000 people. You can only be you, and you achieve what you achieve and everybody achieves their thing. So yeah, I try my best to not be competitive. As for growing up in Peru, yes, Latino culture is very macho. And my dad always taught me from when I was a kid, like, don't cry. If I would cry as a kid, it's like, don't cry. Boys are not supposed to cry. Like, he sat me, like, I turned 12 years old and he came to my room, sat on my bed, and I was just playing. I was just chilling. And he's like, okay, you're 12 years old now. You're not supposed to cry anymore. And I think I started crying. I'm just very sensitive. I'm a Pisces, I'm a softie, but I had to toughen up being in Peru. So I put all these armors on and I joined a street gang and I did a bunch of bad things to people. I was like, you can't hurt me. It doesn't matter if I'm a short, light-skinned person. you screw with me, you screw with my street gang, and I'll get you. And, you know, and those are just a bunch of walls and boxes and armors that I'm putting around this beautiful heart that should just shine and love and be expansive and accepting. So I had to remove that one at a time and be like, no, you don't need an armor. You're not in danger. No one's out to hurt you. Whatever level of masculinity or machoness you got is perfectly how you're supposed to be. There's a spectrum and they're all good and you are you and you're not better than anyone else and no one else is better than you. You're just your particular equation code. So love yourself through it. So then you can like put down the guard. And if somebody calls me like, oh, you're this, you're that, it's like, yeah, I guess so. And that's cool. I'm all right. I love myself and whatever. And you're you. And we're all something different. We're all different fractals. So, you know, that goes, you know, in the same conversation. I probably won't throw myself in the soccer stadium environment that I used to go to so much as a teenager to like, you know, cheer and like, you know, go out and throw rocks at people. I just wouldn't put myself in that reality anymore because it's just not resonant. And why would I go to a place that makes me feel uncomfortable if there's nothing to gain other than going somebody else's vibe? So yeah, I don't know. I think it's just like finding who you are and being comfortable with it and just putting down your guard and letting other people be who they are too, whatever it is, even if it is quote unquote negative, let them be.
Well, I think that's really beautiful. And that process of self-acceptance is so clear in your art too, the acceptance of everybody. And I just think this pure emotion coming from your pure heart, you do feel it when you see your work. And I look forward to seeing one in person. And I am just so taken by the collaboration that you're doing with BUA. And maybe to round things out, do you two want to talk about this collaboration, just what the intention is behind it and how you see this hybridization of your two styles?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's something that would really, I was unprepared for, you know, and quite honestly, because I had never worked with an artist like Chris. And even though my work is highly stylized and manneristic, it's also, it comes from a place of naturalism. And I'm a classical painter. And so when Chris had sent me this, you know, there was some more stuff. And there was some stuff that was amplifying on a more key, high key level. So like the background is untouched, but to be truthful and honest with my interpretation of a true collab, it was not like, hey, I have a very famous painting, paint on top of it. I did that with Ron English, and that was fine with Ron because he just did the head and the hands. But Chris went in there and said, hey, I'm gonna create this world. And I said, okay, you want to create this world? Let's fucking go. And let's make me like the DJ who lives in Chris's world. So I had to repaint the DJ from scratch. That's a completely repainted painting because he had to be lit by the wall that was emanating and illuminating him, right? So everything changed. Obviously, I didn't change the line over him, or I had to paint pretty much around most things, but there's still, everything was a repaint for me. On my stuff that he didn't even touch, because I had to make it keyed to his world, speaking his language. We're speaking different languages, but we're communicating on a current thread. So doing that was very difficult for me, as I think it was challenging for Chris to do the initial one just on my painting. And then it was difficult for me, but difficult, what it did was it broke this kind of third wall and creating another dimension. And that's what is the most interesting thing, is that all of the energy that he put into it, I was able to speak to it. I was able to talk to it. And I was able to really communicate and have a conversation with it. And so like, it wasn't about taking it off, putting it on, making it better, making it worse. It was just about, what can I do to communicate the language? So like here in the painting is how it was. But as it gets closer to this light source that's getting affected by the radiant of the positive pineal third eye energy, it's affecting everything, even into the really abstraction of the energy coming off onto his face, but into the wall. So that's a lot of what I did is I started to have a real conversation with Chris when Chris wasn't here. I don't really know Chris that well, but I started to know more about him and his art, you know, because I always say, Chris, sometimes I say, I am more my art is more me than I am myself. Mm-hmm. It is like the pure, like you talk about, can't really explain ayahuasca, you can't paint that. It's in another dimension. It's up mm-hmm. and down. You said that really sang to me because that's kind of how I feel my art. My art is more me than, I could tell you all the stories about my life. You can read all the stories about my life. You can, whatever, you can go look at pictures about my life, but my art's going to tell you a deeper story than I could ever tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And so like whatever you had put on there, the strokes was a meaning to me, and it was a conversation and it was a dialogue, and I went with it. And so I put my DJ in Chris's world, essentially, because that was a giant bookcase of records. And Chris said, no, this is a portal into almost my imagination. And that's how I took it. And so I was like, okay. So then that was a poster of Rising on the wall. He made into a stained glass window. You know, and so like everything was this conversation that I was having with someone who wasn't in the room, but I was still having it with his art. And so that to me was like that. I've never really done a collab like this. This is the first like deepest collab, because I'm not just letting someone paint in my painting or painting on top of someone's painting. I did a collab with a couple of people where it was back and forth, and I've done it more like with drawings. You know, and I've certainly done it with my kid. My kid draws something and it's so fresh and exciting, and I build on top of it. But I kind of, you know, put a classical aspect. I make it live in reality, right? Ooh, that's a building, and that's a person with a hand that's grabbing a tangerine, and it's getting squeezed and whatever. Do you notice that I was almost going to say tangerine squozed, as if that was a word? Yeah, you know, I know you noticed it, so I had to point that out. Because that's something a kid would say. I squozed it. But so yeah, that's what this painting was about. And then the turntables had to live in the environment too, because the turntables before are only getting illuminated by one light source. And now all of a sudden it's a massive light source. It's a very powerful pulsating light source. So everything has to live in there. And if it doesn't live in there, then what is it doing? Is just living in my world that I was living in before, and then he's painting on top of my world? No. So this was the truest collaboration I've ever done in my life, I think.
Cool. What an honor, man. Thank you so much.
This is true.
For me, it was tricky because I'm getting... So he sent me the JPEG, and I printed it, and I was like, okay, I think I'm going to... Like, I can't paint on top of this DJ. Like, the whole thing is a finished masterpiece. But where can I squeeze in and still be like, hey, I'm here too. Like, you know, like, let's make something balanced. And, you know, I'm worthy of collaborating with this great artist that asked me. And like, wow, this is great. I gotta do a good job. And I whited out the back areas and the poster. And then... what happened to that? I think it started cracking, the print. It just, I think it moved from Canada to Colorado, and the weather just cracked it. So I had to like reprint it again and rewhite it out again and draw it again. And then only till I moved to Florida, I had time to really tackle it and focus. I couldn't do that in Colorado. It just wasn't the vibe. I was going through other emotions that needed attention and expression. So yeah, so I just, I'm a DJ to some degree. I own those Tech 12s. I love to play records. I don't scratch, I don't beat match. I don't have the really turntablist skills, but I love turntablist culture. But I also feel that it's not necessarily like he's done a tab of acid or smoked some DMT. Like, though, most people will just go to the easy explanation, like, oh, somebody drank too much something. Maybe he's just in a trance from like vibing in the music, and that just like taking him to a whole world that is beyond physical existence. And I only really noticed this yesterday when I was looking at the painting, but my vortex is kind of like a spiral. But then the record is also a spiral of grooves. So I was like, I don't know if I did that on purpose. I thought about it, or I just did it like, you know,
instinctually. But yeah, it's like an echo of what he's doing with his hands. It's almost happening behind him through energy. And yeah, I gave him dreadlocks of weird stuff. That was spray paint. And then I also painted other areas spray paint. And the thing in the back isn't actually stained glass. It's just another portal. But I don't think I succeeded at it. I was still learning how to do glazes. And I don't think I pushed it enough to feel like you could get sucked into it. But yeah, it's nonsensical on the physical. It doesn't obey physical parameters and make sense with lights and up and down. But also his drawing doesn't make any sense if you're really trying to obey the laws of perspective. You know, it's exaggerated, it's distorted. So like, I'm like, all right, we're getting weird here. Here's something else that doesn't happen in reality. And that's the beauty of art. If we're just going to paint things that are only in our reality, might as well just live our reality and not paint it. Let's paint things that nobody has painted before. That's the power of God that we have.
I think that's what we did. I think we achieved that.
Woo! Nice.
All right. Well, Lizzie, thank you for tuning in and asking some wonderful questions. And of course, Chris Dyer, thank you for being our incredible guest. And
thank you.
Coming all the way here to Texas to do this podcast. It's the only reason it's here.
Yes.
Okay. But seriously, it's amazing.
No, really, it was an honor to get to talk to you and to learn about your incredible practice and intentionality. And you're such an authentic person. And I think that really resonates in everything that you do. So it was a treat to get to hear that and share it with our listeners. So thank you so much. And I hope that I will get to see this beautiful collaboration that you did.
Sounds good. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, everybody, and keep listening to Art Attack. Spread the word. We do this because we love it. We don't monetize this. We do it because we fucking love art.